Hey, and welcome to Splish Splash, the interview podcast that is the American Apparel V-neck with text that reads, "We went on 4 dates and all I got was this cold." I'm your host, Tony Pareko. So on today's show, we have Jennifer Crawford, and I really can't say enough about Jen simply because she does so much. Among other roles, she is a small business owner. She's an improv comedian. She's a podcaster. And most recently, a podcast festival organizer of a really fantastic event happening next month that's intuitively titled DC Podfest. And you'll be hearing all about DC Podfest during our interview today. I mentioned that Jen is a podcaster. She hosts a really great show called the Jellyvision Show Podcast. And it's a weekly show done both by and for creative entrepreneurs. So it's a show that fits well under categories such as life coaching, self-help, life hacks, that sort of thing. It's billed as being for creative entrepreneurs and small business people, but it's really ultimately for anyone who's interested in becoming more resourceful and proactive about achieving their goals. Jen and a panel, they talk about really great topics such as about how it's okay to fail and giving up the search for perfection and about how you can give yourself permission to do whatever you want. So it's a really great show. I listen to it every week and you should think about checking it out too. So let's turn now to Jen Crawford on this week's episode of Splish Splash. So Jen, someone asked me who I was interviewing this weekend and I told them who you were and they didn't quite get it. And I then went ahead and referred to you. I described you as the fairy godmother of DC podcasters.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And here's why. Because you are so incredibly pleasant. You have powers. You do nice things for people. I just think of you as like Glinda from The Wizard of Oz.
Wow. That's very, I'm really flattered. That's great.
Yeah, because I've been looking to you as sort of a leader of DC podcasters for kind of a couple of months now. And that's just sort of how I've conceptualized you in my head. You are a moderator of a podcast Facebook group. Did you create it for DC podcasters?
I did. Yeah, I did do that.
That's cool. Also, one thing that I think is really cute about that group is Toot Your Own Horn Tuesdays, where podcasters are encouraged to get all your self-promotion out on one day rather than have like never-ending spam.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you kind of have to do that. Although recently people have been kind of breaking that rule. So I've had to, you know, make a little Facebook post reminding people of the rules, but trying to do it in a way that people don't get offended or upset because, you know, I get it. You know, you want to get yourself out there and you join this group and you probably think, well, it's a group for podcasters. So what else is there to talk about than my episode?
Yeah.
But there's so much more, you know, obviously to share when you're in a community like that. So yeah, I started the DC podcaster Facebook community because I am incredibly passionate about podcasting as a podcaster and someone who actually enjoys podcast listening. And, you know, we live in the DC area and it's so rich with culture, opportunities, groups, organizations, and there actually wasn't anything for the podcasting community. And being sort of an entrepreneurial type person, I am always, if it's not there and you need it, it's up to you to make it happen.
Sure.
So it's not that hard to make a Facebook group, but I think it was needed.
No, so you really fulfilled the need.
It was as simple as that. It was a need and people came. And the biggest challenge was actually finding the podcasters because as a podcaster, we can't search for each other geographically. Because, you know, we're an internet-based platform. So geography typically doesn't have a lot to do with your podcast. So there was a lot of like hunting and pecking and, you know, asking friends if they know of a podcast to refer them to the group and, you know, that sort of thing. But it's growing and I've met some great people and we, you know, we get together once a month and we geek out on podcasting because as you probably know, even though podcasting has become a lot more mainstream and it's getting a lot of publicity lately, it's still, a lot of people still don't understand what I do.
Sure.
They don't understand what a podcast is. They look at me like I have two heads if I'm like at a party or something and I'm like, I have a podcast. I'm like, what? And that's frustrating, but that's the way it is.
I don't mean to be coarse or talk about age. You know, there's a little bit of an age difference between us. Do you think some of that is slightly generational when you say that you're at a party? Like when I'm at a party and I drop that I have a podcast, everyone's like, awesome.
It probably is. Yeah, it probably is. I'm 45 and I've been podcasting for a little over 5 years now. So it really wasn't cool when I started. And I'm certainly not, you know, a founding podcaster. The podcasting was going on before then. But yeah, I think it is. I think it is generational, not across the board, but just generally speaking, I think you're right.
Sure. So I want to dip into your background a little bit. I want to see what's inside the jelly jar.
Okay.
Because I know that you're all about bad puns, and you come up with the cutest bad puns. It's really, really great.
Yeah, I get a lot of heat for my puns. Puns are supposedly just a really awful form of humor, but I've just always liked them. So why should I give them up just because other people don't like them?
Right. So where are you from?
Where am I from? I've lived in various parts of Virginia since I was in elementary school, but I was born in Cherry Point, North Carolina. My dad was in the military, so we moved around a bit. And then my parents were divorced when I was 9. So I've stayed in Virginia since then.
Cool.
Yeah.
What'd your mom do?
My mom managed departments and grocery stores.
Okay.
When I was growing up, there was a grocery store called Bon Foods, which I don't think is around anymore, but she managed the produce department. And then later on, after I left home, she managed convenience stores.
Okay.
And eventually bought her own outside of Myrtle Beach. And she had that for a number of years, but she ended up getting held up at gunpoint one too many times.
Oh, God.
And sold the store.
I can understand the rationale to exit.
Yeah, that it was not a good scene. It was very scary.
Gotcha. Are you an only child?
No, I have a younger sister.
What's she about?
She is an attorney.
Okay.
She has her own law firm, a family law firm in Fairfax City, Crawford Law. In case you're on the Ashley Madison list, you might want to give her a call.
Okay.
Yeah.
So would you say you picked up some entrepreneurial spirit from your family?
Maybe yes, but maybe not in the way you're thinking, because my mom was an entrepreneur for very late in her life and for a very short period of time. But what I did learn is we grew up and we didn't have a lot of money. And my mom had a tremendous work ethic. She worked so, so hard, but she worked for other people. And she was typically underappreciated. She was working minimum wage jobs and working her fingers to the bone. Like, just literally, that is the picture that comes to my head. And I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to be in that situation where I was just working so hard for so little.
Sure.
So to me, I always just felt that I didn't want to be a victim of someone else's control.
Okay.
And if I was going to make mistakes, I'd rather make my own mistakes or fail at my own doing rather than someone else's.
So you sort of maybe learned about what you didn't want.
Yeah, I think so. That's the only thing I can think of. You know, I started my first business when I was 19.
And I heard about that in your most recent episode.
Actually, my first business was my pet sitting company. But when I was like in high school, middle school, I had a little babysitting thing going on where I started babysitting. This was like, you know, not a business, but kind of businessy.
Right.
And I got my friends hooked in and I'd get them jobs and take a percentage and that sort of thing, which didn't seem like a big deal then. But now looking back, I'm like, I kind of was thinking like that for a long time, entrepreneurial. And I don't know where it came from other than seeing my mom struggle and us struggle and having our housing tenuous at times and not knowing how, you know, our ends were going to meet, having to move unexpectedly, all these situations. Like that situation of not having money, you lose so much power and control over your life. And it's not about having nice things. I mean, you know, I'm not against having nice things, but it's about having like control of your life and being able to say what's going to happen to you and not having someone else be able to do that for you.
What were the personal boundaries like in your family? I hear you talk about your housing being tenuous and you being clued into that. What kind of relationship did you have with your parents in terms of like what they would share with you?
I think it was interesting because I actually was thinking about this recently, you know, because they say there's a relationship in your adulthood to money based on the messages that you picked up on as a child from your parents. And I don't think we ever sat down and talked money, but there were a couple of key things that were definitely communicated. One was to not have any debt. Like for some reason, that was really important to my mom. Like she didn't have a credit card until she was like in her 40s. I can't say that I followed that path, unfortunately. And the second thing, there was definitely a feeling of there are those people, like the rich people, and then there's us. And there's a huge difference.
Sure.
Like we don't really like them because they're rich and they look down on us and we will never cross paths. And that is their world and this is our world. And there's no crossing that street. So there's a little bit of that, but I never understood it. And I never understood why, because I'm like, well, we're not dumb. You know, we're not dumb people. We're hardworking. There's no reason we can't have what these people have. I never understood that reasoning. It seemed just very prejudicial, fear-based. So that was always very cognizant of that. And to that exists today. My mom is still like that. Okay. She's still like kind of, there's us and there's them kind of attitude.
Sure. So it seems like you've really moved past that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so. I've never felt limited to accomplishing anything. I've always felt like I can accomplish things. Like if I put my mind to it and I have a good idea and I work hard and smartly, the world is everyone's oyster. And that's probably rose-colored glasses for sure. But I would rather believe that than have a fatalistic, you know, depressing sort of view of the world.
I totally hear you. By the way, this is just me complimenting you again, but through rose-colored glasses. I mean, in my mind, you are the personification of rose-colored lenses.
I've been accused of that before.
Really?
So it's not, yeah.
I feel far less original than I thought I was.
You are original. You are. Don't worry. You
Thanks. Are. So, okay, let's talk about your show, the Jelly Vision Podcast. You've been doing it for like 5 years now. That's a long time.
It is. It's weird because it doesn't feel like 5 years. I kind of like saying 5 years because it sounds like, oh, well, if you've been doing it for 5 years, you must have something. At the same time, I'm almost embarrassed to say it's been 5 years because I'm never happy with it completely. Like I always want to improve it. I always want it to do better. It's a work in process. And I don't know if that's the right attitude to have about it, but that's the way it is. But we started so awfully. We started out as a live streaming show at a business I used to own called The Soundry. And when I started it, I really thought of it as an experiment, which is kind of cool to say that, except that I think when I said experiment, I really gave myself too much permission to not care about the quality. Because I'm like, oh, it's an experiment. We can do anything. It doesn't have to be perfect. I was kind of going through this F perfectionism phase, you know? So I was like, fuck perfectionism. We're going to be experimental. And we were, but we didn't rein in the reins, I think, as quickly as we should. And we weren't taking it seriously. I don't think we took the podcast seriously until like year three.
Okay. So what made you think, I want to do a podcast? How'd that happen? Because I think about 5 years ago, I was listening to podcasts, but only like This American Life and like Planet Money, maybe.
Okay. Yeah. Which, you know, came from terrestrial radio.
Yeah.
So the beautiful thing about podcasting is that it gives people a voice that haven't had a voice, right? I think that's just one of the most amazing things about it. So the disenfranchised, the underserved, the minorities out there, women, you know, suddenly have a microphone and can get their message, their stories out there. In my case, the stories or messages I wanted to get out there all had to do with local artists in general. So people that were doing amazingly creative things and improving their craft and passionate about what they're doing, but didn't have a large audience. And so for me, this was a very inexpensive way to get their story out there to maybe one more person. Yeah, I had no idea if we were gonna end up with one listener, 10 listeners, but I thought for the low cost, it was worth offering that. And these were the kind of people that interested me. I was interested, as an entrepreneur, I was interested in approaching what they were doing from a business standpoint. So the mission is still the same. We want to give people a voice, but it's also now combined with, we want to help artists and creative people be better business people so they can actually make a living doing what they want to do rather than doing their art and then also, you know, having three or four other jobs.
Sure. So, and actually what strikes me most about your show is that I find it to be very therapeutic and nurturing.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much so.
Okay.
Like, and in this regard, I don't even necessarily get business tips from your show. I see it as good therapy, and it's a show that I think is very effective. It's a great voice about hearing someone else's voice and how it can help you become unstuck.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you said that. I actually really appreciate that. I listen to a lot of business podcasts. I do, because I'm an entrepreneur. So I listen to a lot, but they tend to be very dry, kind of boring. And so part of our goal is to make it a little less boring, a little more interesting to listen to, and also to capture sort of the process. Like, I'm not a millionaire. My co-host isn't a millionaire. A lot of the entrepreneurial podcasts out there are conducted either by very successful people, or they interview very, very financially successful people. And I've kind of am fascinated by the process to that point. So I love talking to people that are just kind of grinding it out, you know, finding their way, finding their little wins, and they're on their way to success, but they're not there yet, because I think that's the majority of us. And there's something really comforting in knowing that other people are struggling and are experiencing some of the same issues, because as an entrepreneur or an artist, it can be a very solitary environment and it can be very lonely.
That's exactly where I was going to go next. I think that it can be very lonely working for yourself. And I see your show as something that helps entrepreneurs fill that void about, you know, what it's like to work for yourself. How do you do this? How do I keep myself sane? How do I keep myself optimistic?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Do you read a lot of self-help books?
Not really. Not really self-help.
It just sounds like you do.
That's interesting. Yeah. I read a lot, and maybe not self-help books, but there are a lot of blogs and things out there that just sort of, they're business and / self-help, because I think there's a whole industry around, you know, like your mindset and, you know, goal accomplishment and meditation, and it all kind of ties into your success as an entrepreneur. So there are a lot of those messages out there that kind of get repetitive, I think, at times, but at the same time, they do hold weight. You know, there is some value there.
I think that's actually what I'm getting at. I think that you consistently find very good online content to discuss. And I'd say actually the world of online content, I sort of think about it as like, man, like who wants to do that anymore? Like who wants to write content? And I've said this to other people, well, that's kind of what drew me to podcasting a little bit. It's more of, well, it's a lot easier for me to speak than it is to write. I think audio and sound has always been very important in terms of the way that I communicate. I mean, for everyone, but I mean, you know, music, hearing people speak, stories, et cetera. And I'm sure that's true for lots of people, but I'd say that in the age of the internet, when there's just everything all the time, I just get sick of looking at words on a screen.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I'm the same way. And I'm also, in addition to that, of just like, there's so much out there. It's, you know, you almost need just a break from it all. But the nice thing about podcasting that I've always enjoyed is that I can multitask a little bit. Like I can be out walking or running and listen to a podcast. I can clean my house and listen to a podcast. It's less demanding of me, which I love. Now there's some, I can't work necessarily and listen to a podcast. I'm going to tune one or the other out. But there are a lot of things I can do while listening. And I appreciate that. It's like, I'm very grateful for the people that are producing podcasts, because I've learned a lot and I have gone through some like tough times while listening to podcasts. You know, when you're on that long drive, you get lost somewhere and you know, somebody's keeping you company when you're listening to that podcast. You know, you're not so alone, or you're doing just a task that's just dreadful, but you've got the podcast there to make it more pleasant.
Sure.
And to me, I'm very grateful that people are out there putting out that great content, because it is, in a lot of ways, a thankless task.
So I've been a regular listener of your show for the last, I don't know, somewhere around 3 months or so.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Nice.
I love it. It's great.
Thank you.
Okay, so where are your personal struggles? Where have they been? Because you always sound so optimistic. Like, I can't imagine you having problems.
Oh my gosh, I have so many problems. No, I have a lot of problems. Balancing everything, because they're, you know, I have these creative projects, which the podcast is one of them. You know, I run an improv troupe, I run a sketch writing group, and then I'm running my own business. And, you know, and I had a business that failed horribly. And so I had to recover, you know, mentally and financially from that. I'm still recovering financially. Mentally, I'm okay. But that was, you know, a huge failure, financial failure and a business failure. And I learned a lot from it, but that was a huge struggle.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah. The business was called The Soundry, and it was a brick and mortar, basically a co-working space for the creative class. I repurposed an old auto body shop and turned it into a coffee shop, a performance space, and a co-working space for visual artists. And we had rehearsal space for musicians. And it was wonderful. It was you had to be a part of it. It was just this really supportive environment where artists were respected and revered.
Sounds like that place that they wanted to make in Rent.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. So, you know, it was very special. A huge, a strong community came out of that. And we had tremendous amount of creative freedom. There were no limits because it was a business. There was no board of directors. You didn't have to present your idea for approval. We were very agile and we could do whatever we wanted, and we did. And it was an incredible experience. And unfortunately, I ran out of money before it got profitable. And, you know, I had business experience, but I never had a brick and mortar, and that's a whole different animal. And I made some mistakes. And the biggest mistake I probably made was I thought if I worked hard, that would be enough. And that is probably my biggest business lesson, that working hard is not always enough.
Right.
You know, you have to work smart too. And so that was what it was. So anyway, the money that I had saved and earned from other things that went well kind of went to that and then some. So I learned a lot. So anyway, I don't regret, I guess, that the failure. I wish it could have been successful. But between the Soundry and the improv, I learned how to fail a lot and be okay with it, because I hadn't really failed up to that point. Like, my business had gone well. I got good grades in school. You know, everything kind of, I worked hard and had some successes. So learning to fail and learning that you can, like, the world doesn't end when you fail. Nobody eats you. You're going to be okay. That was a really cool lesson. But sometimes I think you have to give yourself permission to fail, and, like, not that you want to fail. I don't know how to put this. It's only because I failed so much that I feel like I know a lot about it. But there is some magic that happens in that moment. And it's not the failure itself. It's how you come out of it.
Sure.
I think is where the learning happens. It's how you pick yourself up. Like, the people that I love talking to are the people that are doing stuff and taking those risks and sometimes failing and not, you know, because not everything you do is going to be a success in life. But they keep going and they get back up and they try something else. Like, to me, that's really, really fascinating. Like, not to quit.
Sure.
You know?
You went to Podcast Movement last month.
I did. I did.
Which is a podcast convention, and it was held in Fort Worth, Texas.
Yes.
Tell me about the experience, because you're the first person I've known who went.
Okay. I would recommend any podcaster go, or anybody that is thinking about podcasting, to go to Podcast Movement. It was an incredible experience. A little bit overwhelming for an introvert, as okay. I am. It was my first conference. So, you know, there's over 1,000 people there. And because I'm a podcast fan, there were some, what I would consider in my world, celebrities. Maybe not everybody knows them.
Like who?
Mark Maron was there, which, of course, I think most people know who he is.
And you got a picture with him.
I did. It was very brief. It's not like I had
a word with him?
No. It didn't really. Just like, hi, like, you know, can I get a picture? I just want to make my co-host jealous. Yeah, he was very nice. But everybody was kind of swarming around him. But I met Leah Tao.
You met Leah Tao?
Yes.
Oh my God.
In the bathroom.
Oh.
Yes. So that was very cool. And there was a very interesting moment, actually, separate from me meeting her. She was on a panel of podcasters. It was her and a couple of men and a male moderator.
Sure.
And the men were speaking and had been speaking for a while. And I was thinking to myself, well, when are we going to hear Leah? Like, their chairs were more forward. She was kind of sitting back comparatively. And I was thinking this, and just as I was thinking this, I heard this commotion in the back of the room, and these women were standing up and like, when are we going to hear from Leah? Yeah. And they made this like ruckus. And I was like, thank you. I was kind of, and you know, the moderator explained, I had questions for Leah. We were getting to them. And that was probably true, I imagine. I'm not calling him a liar, but on the surface, it did seem like she was kind of being set aside. And
that's weird, because she's a giant.
Oh, she is a giant. But you know, we talk about this a little bit on the Jilly Vision show. There's like this phenomenon called like a micro celebrity. So like, I would call Leah like kind of a micro celebrity. Like, you know, you're going to know about her if you're like into the Moth and storytelling, right. NPR, you're going to know her. But if maybe you're like into NASCAR and other things. Maybe, you know, you're not going to connect to her world, but in her world, she is, she's a total big deal.
Yeah.
I could barely speak when I met her. Like, sure. We're washing our hands side by side. And I'm like, okay, she knows my hands are clean. And I was just like, I love your show. I love your stories. I love your voice. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I'm like, oh my God. Like, she probably just like, get away from me.
Well, I also could expect maybe the commotion in the room about wanting to hear Leah, just so you can hear that smoky voice.
Yeah, she's got a very distinctive voice. And it's interesting because I think I read that early on she got criticized from her voice. And it's sort of a topic that we're starting to see in the podcast community, women being criticized.
Vocal fry.
Yeah, the vocal fry. They're being criticized for their voices being annoying or valley girlish or whatever it is. And there is a feeling that men don't get the same criticism for their voice. And there's a lot of theories for this. Of course, sexism being the umbrella of them all. One being that, well, we're just not used to hearing women's voices, and we're not used to hearing women have a voice of authority. And so there's some adjustment period. Maybe we're all getting used to that. I don't know. I don't have all the answers, but it is an interesting discussion worth having.
Yeah. I think Ira Glass's response was, you'll get used to it. We're not doing anything about it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I'm glad Leah just stuck with her voice, because there are a lot of women that are, even some that I know, that are going through vocal coaching and trying to fix their voices and make them more pleasant, you know, have a more NPR-esque voice, which, you know, I think that's a shame. I don't like the thought that people are all trying to sound the same.
Sure. So have you implemented anything you learned at Podcast Movement on your own show?
In the process of, yes, there are a couple of things. One, we talked about before we started recording, you basically said, hey, don't talk too much because I want to save it for the show. I said, I completely understand, because we have the same problem, because we have in-studio guests on our podcast, and it's natural to talk to them. But what we found is we almost, you know, we try to give them cheese and crackers or something so that they're preoccupied, because some of the really golden stuff comes out in those few moments of getting to know each other.
Being a show host raises all these new concerns about perfection.
Yes, it's so crazy. So one thing that I can't remember if this was suggested in during one of the breakout sessions or not, but I am thinking of turning the microphone on when the guest shows up and just see what we catch, in case we catch something that we want to maybe like turn into like an intro or something. So I think we're going to do that. The other thing is we're talking about setting up some meetups or a Facebook group for the show so that we can connect with our listeners. That is the one thing I feel like I'm not doing a really good job of. We do have some engagement, but not nearly as much as I'd like. And I feel like I would love to get out and meet some of the listeners face to face, or at least give them an opportunity to like talk to each other and connect online in some way through a Facebook group, probably.
So following Podcast Movement, one thing you've been developing for a while now is the aforementioned DC Podfest, which is an enthusiastic celebration of podcasts and podcasting. And it's going to be going down in November. And tell me about all of this, because I'm very excited. I'm very, very interested.
I'm so happy to hear you say that. It's November 6th through the 8th. So it happens over a weekend in November. It is going to take place at the Wonder Bread Factory, which used to be a Wonder Bread Factory, but now it's like this cool hipster building that has some very cool businesses in it, but they also happen to have an event space that's a really, I think, a nice size for our first DC Podfest. It holds about 250 people, which is a lot, you know, that's a lot of people, but in comparison, like Podcast Movement was like 1200 people. So this is much, much smaller. And I guess it's going to be a little bit, there's going to have some, maybe some conference elements to it, but I really want it to be less passive than my experience at Podcast Movement. And I have nothing critical to say about Podcast Movement. This is just, you know, we need to put something together that's like uniquely ours and something that I think speaks to DC, which what I love about DC is the diversity and the arts that are there and the creativity. I really want to celebrate the podcasting talent that is here, and also promote the platform to people who might be interested in podcasting, get some awareness about podcasting. So for people who aren't listening, like, let them know how easy it is and how it can benefit them in a number of ways. And obviously network with other podcasters, because I think, again, it could be a very solitary feeling hobby or profession, depending on what level you're at. But there is a community there that can come together. And you know, just have a good time with it. I want to be very DIY. I want, at the workshops, I want people, like, I want them to be more hands-on. I want discussions to happen. I want partying to happen. I think we're going to have our own bit of awards going on, some fun, cool, lighthearted awards. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. We're, you know, we're still putting the scheduling and stuff together. You're going to be a part of it.
I am.
Which I'm very excited about, because people who might not know, you have another podcast that you're involved with called Hometown Sounds.
That's true.
So that, you know, is what, so with your music background, we thought you guys would be the perfect team to curate some music for our dance party Saturday night.
I'd love to.
So yeah, it all comes together. The community, supporting the community. I think it's going to be amazing.
That's my goats.
Yeah. Thanks for asking about it, by the way.
Definitely. Where did the idea come from?
Of DC Podfest?
Yeah.
You know, it was the same, kind of the same place where the DC Podcasters community group on Facebook came from. I was looking to connect with more podcasters because it was something that was a really important part of my life. And I didn't know anybody in my circle of friends that was actually, other than people that had been on my podcast, that was actually doing it. And I just really wanted to talk to people about it and connect with people that felt as strongly as I did about it. So I started looking around to see if there was anything like a festival or a conference or something in the DC area. And there wasn't. I was really surprised because they, you know, DC, there's something going on for everybody and everything in DC. And so I thought, well, again, if it's not there,
Make it.
I mean, we'll make it happen. It's, you know, just some organization. I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. I've organized things before, but nothing this big. So we'll see. I have no idea what it's going to be like or how it's going to be received. It's our first year. I hope it's going to be great.
Sure.
But if not, we'll make it better next time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jen, so what's with the pseudonym?
Of Jelly?
Jelly.
Oh my God. I'm really, do you actually know the story?
No, I don't.
You don't know this story? I'll tell you the truth, but it's very embarrassing. So
it's embarrassing. Why do you use it?
Because I, you know, it's like, how do you undo, like, it would mean changing the show name and all of that.
Okay.
So I think it's like, Jelly is just like, as a word, I like it. It's just fun on your tongue kind of word, but it originated back when
it's no moist.
Exactly. It's not panties or moist. Right. Because like women hate those words.
Right, exactly. That's the joke.
But back when I was at the Soundry and I was going through like probably just like a really difficult time, I was constantly stressed and I'd never been so stressed for such a long time before. It was really taking its toll on me mentally. I was not like necessarily in a great place. And at the time I had discovered Philippa Hughes, who she came up with the Pink Line Project.
Yep.
And she was putting on these amazing art events, and
Cherry Blast
was going on, and she was getting a lot of publicity. I didn't know her personally, but I got obsessed with her. I was following like any article that was written about her. I like, you know, friended her on Facebook. I like subscribed to the blog. I was checking everything, and I was so envious of her press coverage. She always looked fantastic in like every picture. She wore like these amazing outfits. She was also traveling simultaneously, like surfing and traveling around the world. And I just started joking that she was like living my life. Like she stole my life. Like, you know, I was in the art world, but in such a different way. Like,
I see where this is going.
Yeah. We were like dealing with art, but I was working like, you know, 14, 15 hour days. I didn't know, you know, am I going to make payroll? I'm stressed out. You know, I'm just frazzled.
And you were Jelly.
Well, I started wondering, I got so curious about her and her awesomeness. And I was like, Philippa PB Hughes. And I was just like, what does PB stand for? Who has two initials in the middle of their name? I was so, again, I'm like so like fascinated by her. I'm in awe of her. I'm jealous of her. I love her. I hate her. Like I'm all over
and
the place.
You wanted to be Jay.
Well, I was like, it must be peanut butter. It must stand for peanut butter. And so
This is a multi-layered.
It's so multi-layered. Part of it was like when we started the Jellyvision show, I was like, well, Philippa doesn't have a podcast. Like, she's just not doing this. Like, you know, and I kind of like, so it's like, if she's peanut butter, then I'm jelly. Like, I'm the exact opposite. Like, she's successful and she just looks like she has everything together. Everybody loves her. She's doing like amazing things in the art community in DC. I mean, she's making this huge difference and people are noticing. And here we are in our little corner of, you know, Vienna, Virginia, and we're doing wonderful things too, but we're not getting that kind of attention. But yeah, it was hard not to be envious because she made it look so glamorous and fun and easy. Now, I know now that she was working very, very hard. And I actually happened to catch an article at the time that clued me in because she was being interviewed and she said something, it was about Cherry Blast. And she said something to the effect, well, when it's 3 a.m., I'm the one cleaning up the trash after the party. And I was like, it was just that one sentence and it told me everything.
Sure.
It was like, yeah, we are the same. Like, because... Yeah. Okay, that makes me feel better because I'm like cleaning toilets. I'm doing all this stuff. Anyway, so I felt that connection with her. So I kind of calmed down a little bit, but I was weirdly obsessed and jealous with her. I'm not that girl today. Okay. And she's been on my podcast. She has not heard this story. Maybe she'll hear it now. And I didn't tell her at the time because I was embarrassed because, you know, she didn't even know I existed, you know, back then. And here I am like obsessing over her success because I'm feeling like she has something I want now being more mature and away from the situation. I don't even know who that person was that was thinking like that. Now I just see her as like a very strong, capable, cool person who's doing stuff. And I admire that. And she's nothing but nice. So that's where the name came from.
Got it. A couple of things in response.
Yes.
One, I've had some issues with jealousy, taking in other people's success and not wanting to be happy for them as well.
I totally hear you on that.
When I was in high school, there was this upper crust of what I regard as like the superheroes of my class.
Right.
And I called them the Perfectos.
That's a great name.
Yeah. And I, and now I'm in one of their bands and now we're great friends.
Look at you. It's, you know, jealousy and envy can be a useful tool in some ways if it doesn't drive you crazy. I was just, you know, like I said, I was in a bad place. You know, it wasn't helping me at the time to focus on that. That was just really silly. I should have just concentrated, like forgot that and just concentrated on myself and what I had going on. But like I said, I kind of admired her and was envious at the same time. But she's totally cool. And if anybody's met her, she's awesome. She's as awesome as she appears.
This is such a cool local story.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if you... Yeah, she's like a micro celebrity around here. You know, she's totally cool. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I want to mention that Philippa and her co-host Karen Yankowski, they have a great podcast in the DC area called Women of Uncertain Age.
Right.
It's a dating podcast. And I have been married forever, but I love their podcasts because it's always cool to hear dating stories and relationship stuff. It's super entertaining and I recommend it to anybody.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Jen, it's been so great having you on the show today.
Thanks for having me. It's so weird just to talk about myself for an hour. I mean, you asked really good questions, so.
Thanks.
You're a good interviewer.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, I actually love your podcast.
Oh, shucks. Thanks, Jen.
You're welcome.
That's it. That's our show. Gosh, I love Jen. She's just got this winning combination of optimism and drive for everything that she does. Subscribe to the Jellyvision Show in iTunes. There is a new episode every Monday. Let's plug DC Podfest again. DC Podfest is going down Friday, November 6th through Sunday, November 8th. That is at the Wonder Bread Factory event space in the Shaw neighborhood. That is across the street from the Howard Theater. There are going to be live shows, networking opportunities with other podcasters, and workshops. It's going to be a great, great event. Tickets are on sale right now at dcpodfest.com. They are $89 for the whole weekend. That is all inclusive. Okay, credits and social media. The show was recorded, produced, and edited by me, Tony Pareko. Our theme music was written and recorded by me with some help from Kevin D'Souza. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/splishsplashpodcast. You can follow us on Twitter at splishsplashpod. Email me at splishsplashpodcast@gmail with booking inquiries, show feedback, whatever, man. Just say hey. And of course, you can subscribe with whatever podcast app you use. That's it for this week. We'll be back at you again real soon with another episode of Splish Splash.